Picture this. You are sitting on your couch, you're scrolling on your phone, and you finally decide to just pull the trigger on that new gadget you've been eyeing.
Oh, yeah, we've all been exactly there.
Right. So you click buy now on a trusted e-commerce site, and you know the drill. You see the familiar interface, the reassuring logos for all those recognized payment methods, the hundreds of five-star customer reviews, and that ironclad buyer guarantee.
It's all engineered to make you feel completely safe.
Exactly. It feels engineered for trust. You buy the item, and then, like, 2 days later, it's right on your doorstep. Clean, simple, and binary.
It's honestly an incredibly comforting architecture. I mean, we like our commerce to be visible, categorized, and protected by big, reliable brands.
Yeah.
The entire system is built from the ground up to reduce friction for you, the consumer.
But what if I told you that, you need to completely shift your perspective today, because today we are looking at the weaponization of convenience.
Which is a pretty heavy concept.
It really is. What if that exact same architecture of trust, you know, those same reviews, and that exact same seamless payment system is secretly being used by global criminal networks as this massive digital laundromat?
It's a huge shift in how we view the internet.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring the hidden mechanics of money laundering inside e-commerce marketplaces. And we are pulling from some incredibly detailed institutional research today, specifically insights from RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute, and Europol.
Fantastic sources. Very thorough.
Yeah, they really are. We're going to look at how high transaction volumes, complex algorithms, and global logistics are being exploited literally right under our noses.
Though setting the stage here requires a really critical clarification right off the bat.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Major players, you know, like Amazon, eBay, or Shopify, they're frequently referenced in these institutional reports simply because of their massive scale and prominence.
Yeah, because they're the biggest targets.
Exactly. This is not a problem unique to them, nor does the presence of this criminal activity imply that these platforms are willingly participating. I mean, the major marketplaces invest billions in identity verification and counterfeit detection.
Yeah, they're the bad guys here.
No, not at all. What we are really examining is how legitimate everyday infrastructure is turned completely inside out. It's the interaction between third-party sellers, remote onboarding, integrated payments, and the fragmented visibility across platforms, banks, and logistics providers.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the actual mechanics of how criminals wash money through these platforms, we have to understand what we are actually looking at.
Right, the definition of the crime itself.
Yeah, because when most people hear e-commerce crime, they immediately think of, you know, getting ripped off. But RESI points out a really fundamental distinction between a standard online shopping scam and marketplace laundering.
It is a totally different beast.
Think of it like this. A scam is like a magician making your wallet disappear. But laundering is a magician using a trap door to make dirty money look like a rabbit they just legally bought.
I love that. That analogy captures the dynamic perfectly. An online shopping scam like, say, non-delivery fraud, is generally designed to steal directly from the buyer.
Right. The criminal takes the money, sends you nothing, and just disappears.
Exactly. But marketplace laundering requires the buyer and the seller to actively cooperate.
Wow, okay.
The entire goal is to create an apparently credible sale or settlement or refund that completely conceals the origin or the purpose of the value being transferred.
And this is exactly why this matters so much to you listening right now. When you encounter an online scam, it is obvious fraud. You feel it, you report it.
You know you've been wronged.
Right. But marketplace laundering is designed to look exactly like your boring, everyday, legitimate shopping history. It uses the exact same digital paper trail.
Down to the tracking numbers.
Yeah. And if we look at traditional money laundering, experts always talk about the three stages, right? Placement, layering, and integration. Placement is just getting dirty cash into the financial system. Layering is moving it around to create confusion. And integration is bringing it back to the criminal as clean money.
Which historically used to require a massive amount of physical effort. I mean, criminals needed cash-intensive front businesses.
Like car washes or laundromats.
Exactly, or restaurants. They had to physically smuggle currency across borders, bribe bank officials, or set up these incredibly complex webs of offshore shell companies.
Which sounds exhausting.
It was slow, it was highly vulnerable to law enforcement surveillance, and it required trusting a lot of really unreliable people.
But with e-commerce, it seems like those three separate exhausting steps are just collapsed into a single click. The platform essentially does the layering for them.
Because the legitimate scale of e-commerce provides criminals with the ultimate cover. We're talking about environments processing millions of transactions an hour.
Millions. It's wild to think about.
Right. Involving huge numbers of low or medium value payments, international buyers, constantly changing product inventories, and rapid fluctuations in turnover.
Which, for a digital merchant, that is just a regular Tuesday.
Exactly. But for investigators, those exact same characteristics make illicit transactions incredibly difficult to distinguish from genuine retail activity.
So, if the buyer and the seller are actually working together in this magic trick, how do they trick the platform into thinking a real business exchange just happened? I mean, we're talking about sophisticated algorithms monitoring these sites, right?
We are. And the most direct pathway they use is what investigators call a phantom transaction.
A phantom transaction. Okay, how does that work?
So a criminal seller creates an account and lists a product at a price they have already agreed upon with a connected buyer.
Okay.
The buyer then uses criminal proceeds, so dirty money, to complete the marketplace purchase. And suddenly, the platform records what appears to be completely legitimate commercial revenue.
Wait. If I go on a site right now and try to sell a standard plastic toothbrush for like $5,000, an algorithm is going to flag that instantly, right? You can't just make up prices for standardized goods.
You can't, which is why they avoid standardized goods entirely.
Ah, okay. So they use art or collectibles, things where the value is entirely made up in the eye of the beholder. I mean, who is an algorithm to say my custom digital sketch or my rare vintage comic book isn't worth $5,000?
What's fascinating here is that the loophole of subjective value is a massive blind spot for financial controls.
I bet.
Criminals list artwork, rare books, specialized electronics, digital products, or customized goods. The economic value is completely subjective and incredibly difficult for an investigator to verify from behind a desk.
Because there's no MSRP for a custom painting.
Exactly. So criminals deliberately overprice goods or conduct repeated transactions where the true market value is just impossible to pin down.
But what about the shipping? Don't they have to prove they sent something?
To solidify the lie, the seller might ship an empty package or an item of negligible value. They generate tracking information, automated messages, and even leave glowing five-star feedback for each other to strengthen the appearance of a completed sale.
You know, I am doing the math on this in my head, and something wild just occurred to me. The platforms charge seller fees, right? Like, usually 10 or 15% on a transaction?
They do, and payment processors often take an additional cut on top of that.
Right, and in the traditional criminal underworld, washing money through shell companies, paying off mules, dealing with cash seizures, it is incredibly expensive. I've read that cartels sometimes lose 30 to 50% of their money just trying to clean it.
Your math is spot on. It's a huge loss for them.
So paying a 15% seller fee to a legitimate tech giant isn't a deterrent at all. It is an absolute bargain. It's basically a cheap, highly reliable laundering tax.
That's exactly how they see it. Criminals view those platform fees as the acceptable cost of doing business. They gladly hand over 15%. Because the remaining 85% is now firmly associated with an identifiable, clean retail transaction.
Wow.
When the funds eventually land in the seller's traditional bank account, the bank just sees a regular, trusted marketplace settlement.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because phantom transactions make total sense for digital goods or things with subjective value, like we said. But what happens when criminals actually want to move physical merchandise?
Right, because it does happen frequently.
The source material highlights a really striking real-world example of this. There was a U.S. Department of Justice case involving an online sneaker retailer.
Yes, the sneaker convergence case. It perfectly illustrates the tactic of commingling.
Commingling.
Right. This is where marketplace abuse doesn't involve a wholly fictitious product, but rather mixing the fake with the real. This defendant was selling authentic footwear alongside counterfeit footwear through various businesses and platforms.
And just blending it all together.
Exactly. The proceeds from both streams were poured into the exact same financial accounts.
I think the natural question for anyone listening is, why couldn't the banks see that half the money was coming from fakes? I mean, don't banks have heavy transaction monitoring?
They do, but we have to look at the mechanics of payment aggregators.
Okay, how do those work?
When you buy a pair of shoes on a major marketplace, your money doesn't go directly from your bank account to the seller's bank account. The marketplace utilizes a payment aggregator that pools millions of dollars from thousands of buyers into a massive master account.
So all the money is just sitting in one giant digital bucket.
Precisely. The platform then takes that bucket, calculates the fees, and distributes batch payouts to the individual sellers.
Got it.
By the time the money hits the seller's traditional bank, all the metadata regarding the individual item sold has been completely stripped away.
Oh, wow. So the bank statement doesn't itemize, like, one pair of authentic Jordans and one pair of counterfeit knockoffs?
No, the bank just sees a generic settlement description, something like marketplace payout.
And that generic description is entirely consistent with the customer's declared shoe business. The bank has no reason to suspect anything.
Exactly. The apparent legitimacy of the seller's wider, authentic inventory basically drowns the illegal component, making it incredibly hard to isolate.
That is so smart in a terrible way.
And it isn't just counterfeit goods either. Stolen goods are fenced this exact same way. Merchandise obtained through organized retail crime, cargo theft, or burglary is resold through established seller accounts.
And again, the bank just sees marketplace payout.
Right. The platform's aggregation strips the context, completely divorcing the revenue from the underlying theft.
Okay, so we have the subjective value trick. We have commingled sneaker empires drowning dirty money in clean sales. What about the logistics themselves? Like, how do stolen credit cards fit into this ecosystem? Because I feel like every time I turn around, there's a new massive data breach.
Europol has done extensive research on this, focusing on what they call card-not-present fraud.
Card-not-present, meaning buying things online.
Right. This is the unauthorized use of payment card data to purchase goods remotely. Criminals acquire this data through phishing, malware, or just purchasing it in bulk on dark web forums.
Sure.
But using a stolen card to withdraw cash from an ATM is way too risky and easily traced.
Right. There are cameras everywhere. So instead, they use that stolen card data to buy luxury products, electronics, or gift cards on an e-commerce platform.
Exactly.
But they obviously can't ship it to their own house. They'd get caught immediately.
No, they ship the goods to a parcel mule.
Which brings us back to you, the listener. If you have ever received a random package addressed to someone else at your house, or if you've seen those shady work-from-home job advertisements offering, like, easy money simply to receive and repackage boxes.
Yeah, those ads are everywhere.
You might have been looking at the recruitment of a parcel mule.
Very likely. These mules receive the package, remove any identifying invoices or tracking material, and forward the merchandise on.
And then what?
Once the criminal network has the physical goods in their possession, they turn around and resell them through a completely different marketplace account.
That is brilliant and terrifying. It converts stolen payment capacity into physical merchandise and then immediately back into clean seller revenue.
Right. It breaks the chain.
It creates this massive firewall of separation between the original victim, whose credit card was stolen, and the account receiving the final resale proceeds.
And the exploitation doesn't stop at resale, unfortunately. The refund loophole is a massive growing vulnerability right now.
Oh, refunds.
Yeah. Refund mechanisms are built to protect legitimate consumers, but they are routinely manipulated to extract or redirect value.
Wait, how does a refund clean money? I don't get that.
Well, one method Europol identifies involves a criminal buying a high-value product with a stolen credit card and then requesting a refund to a completely different account or payment method that the criminal controls.
Oh, I see.
So the original purchase is made with stolen funds, while the refund directs clean, legitimate money straight into the offender's pocket.
But retailers have return policies. You have to actually send the item back to get the refund.
Criminals have found workarounds for that, too. They might return a cheaper substitute product of a similar weight or send back a box filled with dry ice that literally evaporates during transit, so the package arrives empty.
Dry ice? That is insane.
Or they manipulate the shipping labels so the package tracks as returned, but actually route somewhere else entirely.
That just sounds like an incredible amount of logistical work just to steal, like, one laptop.
Which is exactly why this process has been entirely industrialized.
Industrialized. Hmm. Like, automated.
There are organized networks that offer refund fraud as a service. These are groups that advertise openly on messaging apps, offering to secure fraudulent refunds for online shoppers.
Wow.
They charge their quote-unquote customers a percentage of the value they manage to recover. The U.S. has actually seen massive enforcement actions against groups running these industrialized refund schemes, resulting in heavy charges of wire fraud and money laundering.
Okay, I want to pivot and talk about the physical storage of all these goods, because so many of these platforms offer fulfillment services, right? The platform stores the inventory in their massive warehouses and ships it out in their own branded boxes.
Yes, integrated fulfillment.
Yeah. But if a criminal uses that service, aren't they just handing hard evidence over to the very company they are exploiting?
Using integrated fulfillment is actually a highly calculated strategy. Think of the weaponization of convenience we discussed earlier.
I think I see it. It's like a bank robber deciding the absolute safest place to store their getaway car is inside the police station garage.
That is a phenomenal way to frame it. By utilizing the platform's third-party logistics, the criminal seller never needs to touch the product directly.
Because touching it adds risk.
Exactly. They can import counterfeit or fraudulently obtained goods directly from overseas manufacturers into the platform's warehouse.
And the platform just thinks it's regular inventory.
Right. The platform then distributes those illicit goods globally in trusted branded packaging, while the criminal maintains absolute zero physical exposure.
So what does this all mean? We have phantom sales relying on subjective value. We have commingled sneaker empires exploiting payment aggregators. We have parcel mules and industrialized refund fraud operations using the platform's own warehouses as police station garages.
A lot to take in.
It is. With all these vulnerabilities, how is this allowed to scale to the degree it has?
Well, the institutional sources outline several key reasons why this scales so efficiently. The first is trust, as platform branding makes a fabricated sale look commercially authentic to banks.
Right, the halo effect of the big brand.
Exactly. The second is sheer volume. Suspicious transactions are literally a drop in an ocean of millions of daily orders.
Finding a needle in a haystack.
The third is cross-border reach. A seller might be registered in one country, hold a bank account in a second, store goods in a third, and sell to buyers in a fourth.
So jurisdiction is just a nightmare.
Complete nightmare. Each participant, the bank, the platform, the logistics company, only holds a tiny fragmented piece of the puzzle.
But what if they get caught? Let's say the algorithm finally catches onto one of these bad seller accounts.
That brings us to the fourth reason it scales, which is interchangeability. The digital infrastructure is highly adaptable. Seller accounts have actually become financial crime assets in their own right. Criminal networks don't just open new accounts, they buy aged seller accounts.
I think I see where this is going. If I open a brand new seller account today and suddenly try to sell $1 million worth of custom artwork, the platform's algorithm is going to just slam the brakes.
Immediately.
Right, but because they have velocity filters, they put probationary holds on funds for new sellers, stuff like that.
You've hit on the core vulnerability of the algorithm.
But if I buy an account that has been selling mundane items for 3 years, it has a positive history. It has trust. It totally bypasses those anti-fraud velocity filters. The criminals can take over an aged account, cash out millions in a single weekend, and if the platform eventually suspends it, they just swap it out and move the network to the next purchased identity.
Exactly. So the overarching question becomes, how do investigators actually fight back against a system that is designed to be this slippery? You have to cut through the digital illusion and establish the seller's true economic reality.
Meaning you have to look past just the digital receipts. You have to ask what products are actually being sold. Where does the inventory originate?
Right. Are the shipping weights and destinations actually plausible? Did the tracking number get reused across multiple orders?
Oh, we really have to dig deep.
You do. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it requires building a highly resilient control stack. The first layer is risk-sensitive seller verification. For example, the U.S. Informed Consumers Act now requires marketplaces to collect and verify specific information from high-volume third-party sellers and suspend them if they fail to provide it.
Okay, that makes sense. The second layer has to be looking past individual accounts, right? Because even if they swap identities, they are leaving some kind of digital footprint. Platforms have to monitor for shared IP addresses, connected devices, and shared fulfillment locations.
Yes, network analysis is huge. Another crucial layer is enforcing refund integrity. This means demanding that refunds ordinarily must return to the original payment method, neutralizing their ability to redirect stolen funds, and heavily scrutinizing any exceptions.
Right, close a loophole.
But ultimately, RUSI makes one major overarching recommendation. Platforms, financial institutions, payment processors, and law enforcement absolutely must share actionable intelligence.
Because they're all blind on their own.
Exactly. No single entity can see the entire financial and commercial chains. They have to talk to each other.
It is truly wild to think about. I mean, we started this deep dive talking about the comfort of your couch and the illusion of a simple e-commerce transaction. But underneath that incredibly user-friendly surface is this complex underworld where convenience is weaponized.
It really changes how you look at the internet.
It really does. It makes you realize that the next time you are looking at a 5-star review for a remarkably expensive rare book or, you know, an overpriced custom digital asset, there might be a much darker supply chain operating right behind that screen.
And that actually brings up a really critical challenge for the future.
Oh, what's that?
Well, the source tells us that to prove a transaction was real, investigators currently rely heavily on physical evidence. They look at package weights, inventory records, and physical delivery routes.
Right, because if the shipping weight says 1 ounce, but you supposedly sold a 40-pound piece of industrial equipment, the investigators have you dead to rights.
Exactly. But think about our increasing shift toward purely digital environments, virtual economies, and the metaverse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If a digital product with totally subjective value can be traded instantaneously across borders,
with absolutely zero physical shipping footprint to verify, there is no warehouse, there is no package weight.
Right. How will future investigators ever prove an exchange was just a phantom?
If the economy becomes completely weightless, the mechanics of laundering might just become entirely invisible.
It's a real possibility.
That is a staggering thought to leave on. If there's no box to weigh, how do you prove the box was empty? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep questioning the systems around you, and maybe take a second look the next time you are about to click that familiar, comforting Buy Now button.